Blog Talk Radio.
It's what you want, boy. It's what you need, boy. We about to give you more.
That's been pent up inside for years. Exclusive type, only for your eyes and ears. You held it in for so long, you burst it into tears. The letters spill slowly across the page like a world premiere. We're lying, the bullshit begins here. The obvious cause, the effects is unclear. The punishment for crimes of the heart could be severe. Though to keep it on the low is a heavy cross to bear. You deep now, submerged with no signs of air. Still your sunken heart thumping like the kick in a snare. While on the surface, it's all turning to a circuit. That's why you're nervous, and you gotta right to be, cause if somebody would have done that shit to me, I mean my best man hitting my wife to be, my sentiments exactly would be history, you know what I'm saying, hey, my people's in a place, let's count it off, 1, 2,
tell me what y'all
to
do, 3, 4, it's time for all of your, together, rock and roll, then you're rolling rock, then your mind to the rhythm and just don't stop, 5, 6, get up inside the mix, 7, 8, no time to hesitate, so let's rock and roll, then you're rolling rock.
Nothing changed, it's all the same thing. The same characters in the book with different names. It's a lot more to lose than you got to gain. You a lot more confused than hip to the game. To beat the script to the game, the price is pain. Men and women get into things, now who's to blame? When everybody whispering about whatever took place and how the fact was denied with a straight face. Them lies, hard to swallow from the bitter taste. But that's a point in the past that can't be erased. So motivate, though it's hard to let it ride or set aside true feelings. Underhand dealing, a lost trust. I wonder if we lost us. It's bigger than me and you, it's monstrous. So I'ma just calm down and shot or relax before I clap the hammer, then the hammer I clap. Count 1, 2,
tell me what y'all to do. 3, 4, it's time for all your
suggestions.
5, 6, get up inside the mix. 7, 8, no time to hesitate.
Back and undo our actions, change what happens, dissect the fractions, a time to rewind and be recorded absent, for real, cause these memories is photographic, pornographic, pushing me close to madness, head heavy like I'm tripping on acid tablets, yesterday as I recall was all fabulous, a thought so, but now I feel like shots hitting my torso, spent a lot of time and trust in the wrong place, fought a lot of fights, rolling with the wrong ace, love, stronger than pride, weaker than disgrace, I need room to think and space. But solid as a rock shall not disintegrate. Thoughts racing like they lunatics on the interstate. Rail, yeah, ill, yeah. My people's in the play, tell me how to start. Here we go.
1, 2, tell me what y'all to do. 3, 4, it's time for all your
suggestions.
Rock and roll to your rolling rock. Then your rock to the rhythm and just don't stop. 5, 6, get up inside the mix. 7, 8, it's time to motivate. Rock and roll to your rolling rock.
Listeners, and welcome to another edition of Conversations of a Sister here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Miss Tracy L. Bell, and I thank you for tuning in tonight, be it online or by phone, for tonight's conversation. And tonight we're talking about the 5 stages of grief. First of all, grief is defined as deep sorrow. Especially grief that is caused by someone's death. Grief is defined by deep sorrow, especially when it is caused by someone's death. A loved one, someone close to us, just caused by death. And my guest tonight is a specialist on this topic, which is why I think that she's so unique. She's a thanatologist, one who studies death and dying and the psychological mechanisms of dealing with it. And we posted it late to my blog, but I've already received emails about questions. Who would study death? Who wants to know about death and dying? Well, you're in for a wake-up call tonight, because she's also a death educator, a leader, a communicator, and, as I stated, a grief specialist. Licensed as a minister and ordained in 2009, she's president and founder of Midnight Gospel, Inc., a nonprofit outreach ministry. Isn't that different? She also heads a nonprofit bereavement loss and grief work center entitled Good Morning Ministry. Now, it's not spelled M-O-R-N-I-N-G. It is spelled M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G. Good Morning Ministries. Isn't that unique? Her primary focus is to minister hope and healing to a hurting people. She is presently in the pastoral care and counseling doctoral program at New Brunswick Theological Seminary. And I'm going to tell you guys something, my listeners. I'm honored to have her as my guest tonight, because she is not only a sister, but she is my high school classmate. So I welcome to the show Reverend Dr. Kathy Risher. Kathy, welcome to the show.
Hey, Trace. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for the invite.
Oh, you're welcome. You know, I see, you know, I'm not on social media a lot, but when I am, I see a lot of your postings. They're very encouraging. Yeah. They're very enlightening. And they're also healing. And sometimes when I read them, I need to see them myself. And it's funny, because I am so proud of you. I'm proud of what you're doing. I'm proud of your ministry. I don't have a chance to express that often, but I just want my listeners to know that when I think about you, I think the one thing that I can always resonate is your laughter. You have great laughter. And when we were in high school, we used to laugh, and your laugh is infectious. And it reminds me a lot of me, because mine is the exact same way.
Yes.
So,
girl.
It's just who you are. And everyone don't know that, but that is you. But happy New Year. How are you? And thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you. Thank you. My hands are clapped. I am like just bowing to you with my hands. Tracy, it's so good to hear you. It's so good to hear your voice.
Well, I'm going to tell you something.
I do try to make this light, because I know how tough it can be. And for somebody to say to you, who studies this? And I'm going to tell you something. I was studying death and dying before death and dying became popular. So, you know, most people now have flipped their license credentials in terms of they probably was doing marriage and family counseling, some other things, and then when the pandemic hit, to get money and to make money, they became specialists in grief.
Wow.
And when you said to me you want me to talk about the stages of grief, I'm right on it, because if you're seeing any of these people and they're telling you that there's stages of grief, that is wrong. So we're going there tonight. I'm going to help unpack it. I'm grateful that you talked about my background, because I have been studying this before it became popular. I got into it with my grandmother and my mother. Seventh grade, I moved to South Carolina to live with my grandmother, my cousin, and I. And at the time, it really didn't make sense. My grandmother was experiencing a lot of loss. She had lost her husband, and then her daughter was killed in a terrible car accident.
Oh, wow.
And my father and his brother didn't want to leave her in this house, you know, 5-6 bedroom house in the South by herself. And they got together and decided that two of their children would go out of each household. So I wasn't asked if I wanted to go to South Carolina. I was like, you're going, like, you're it. And then my other cousin from my dad's brother, he chose a daughter. And we were like 2 years apart, like a year, year and a half apart. So my grandmother, little did we know, my grandmother was the caretaker in the community.
Mm.
And she didn't drive. So we would literally walk dirt roads with her, taking care of people who were sick, who was grieving, who was dying. Or part of like handling the funeral. And when I tell you that anointing from my grandmother, Trace, fell on me. I didn't get it until one day I was doing, I did chaplaincy work at Valley Hospital in Ridgewood, clinical pastoral education. And then I wanted to stay on, so I stayed in hospice. And I was certified as an end-of-life doula. And we're talking like 10 years ago. That's why I know what I'm doing, okay? And so I'm sitting in the training with Henry Fersko Weiss, who is a pioneer in end-of-life doula, almost like a birthing doula, but he changed the term for people that wanted to sit with people and be with people at the end of that person's life. So I'm certified as an end-of-life doula. So he was going through the training, and I think I was in, like, the initial training of this program. And God worked that. He really did. And I'm sitting there, and he's talking about guided visualization as a technique to help people who are, you know, actively dying, you know, transition nicely out, like to have a good death, if you will. And so I sat there and I just started crying. And he said, you know, are you okay? Would you like to share with the rest of us what you're feeling? So, you know, I'm the only woman of color in the room. And I'm like, yeah, sure. I said, thinking about how my grandmother would sit with people at the end of their life, not knowing she was an end-of-life doula, right? And then he's talking about this technique, guided visualization, to help people put something on their mind as they cross over. And I said, and my grandmother, who was also a Christian woman, one of the mothers of Lovely Hill Baptist Church, would also tell people to put Jesus on your mind. And I'm like, so she was doing guided visualization as an end-of-life doula. And I just sat there and was just Ryan, do you hear me? And I'm like, oh, my God. So it's not something that, you know, I signed up to do. God just transitioned me. And because of all of my learning, if you will, my certifications, I was able to put together the death and dying course at the college where I am tenured assistant professor for the sociology department. So I've taught death and dying for a number of years. So I'm here, and I want to set this right with the stages of grief, because you may be seeing someone that may be telling you you need to get through these five stages, if you will: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. Well, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who was a Swiss American psychiatrist. She was also a pioneer in thanatology, right? I put thanatologist on one of my flyers, I think, the beginning of the pandemic, and somebody said, what is that? They was being, like, so ignorant. And I'm like, it's just, you know, earth says, and thank you, Trace, for looking it up. It's a person who actively practices and studies death and dying. And so Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, this Swiss-American psychiatrist, was a pioneer in thanatology. She studied this stuff. She worked with terminally ill families and patients. So part of her research was being, if you will, an end-of-life doula, even though she was looking at people sitting at their bedside while they were in the process of actively transitioning, actively dying, she came up with these five areas. So this was the theme throughout her research. So she said people who are in the process of actively dying, these are the stages that they go through. Hear me? Big difference. It's not people who are in the process of mourning a loss of, of any type, you know, because it's other than death, job loss, financial, spiritual loss, limbs, etc., right? So as she sat with terminally ill people, she recognized in her research this was the theme, that they were literally in denial that they were dying.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so they sat there and they're like, yeah, I'm not, I don't want to tell anybody, you know, I'm dying because I'm not dying. It's like, no, no, you're leaving here and you're on your way out. You're in this bed, literally on your deathbed. And so these individuals just got the report from their doctor with X amount of time to live, and they were not accepting it, okay? They were not accepting it. So they were in denial. A few months, maybe like a few weeks ago, I did an interview with Pastor Eric Brewer from out of Rhema Church. And one of the things that we talked about was him and his wife both had the coronavirus. And, you know, our faith teaches us to call scriptures, to quote scriptures, to pray prayer of anointing for healing or whatever. And I remember asking him, I backed him up in the interview, and I'm like, so you guys, were you in the, no, he said it initially, that they were in denial. And I'm like, did your faith put you in that spot? Because, you know, the Word of Faith movement with Dr. Fred Price, God bless him, rest his soul. You know, they taught us, you know, speak it into existence. You know, you're healed. You're the the hope of Christ and all of this other stuff. Nothing's wrong with that. I'm a minister of the gospel. So I believe in quoting stuff too. But I also believe when you get to a certain point, drive yourself to the hospital, call an ambulance, still quote scripture, speak in tongues, do what you need to do. But don't be so much in denial. So this first stage that Elizabeth Kubler-Ross identified in these individuals who were actively dying was they were in denial. And so after they dealt with the denial, they made meaning out of that. Then they went into the next stage where they became angry. Okay, I'm going to leave here. I'm going to leave here with maybe some stuff undone. I'm not ready to go. I'm angry with God. Why did he have to give me cancer? Why am I bedridden with some other life-altering diseases, right?
Right,
so they
became
angry. They went into anger. And then after that stage, she watched these individuals go into bargaining. Now they're going to bargain with God. God, or whoever they're bargaining with, their creator. If you give me a little bit more time, maybe I'll do X, Y, and Z because I'm not ready to leave here. I'll spend more time with my family, with my loved ones. So these individuals who were actively dying, they were terminally ill patients, they were part of her case study, they began to bargain. And after the bargaining, they became depressed.
Yes.
Right? So the depression set in, and it could have been clinical, whatever the depression was, that set in. And after the depression, after they went through denial, anger, bargaining, depression, then they became accepting of their fate, Trace. So then they said, you know what, this is going to be, look, I welcome it as much as I can welcome, you know, death, but I'm here for it, if you will. And I'm going to make peace with my fate and gently walk into the night and to the light as well. And those are the stages of her work. And these stages have been taken out of context, And when the pandemic first hit, I remembered. I couldn't take it no more. I was watching a lot of Facebook Live, and people were coming on telling people about, and I can, I mean, I ran in the room, got some lipstick, put it on there. You can see that video on my YouTube channel. And I'm like, I'm so tired of people. And, you know, and we were pivoting and transitioning into teaching remotely at home. So
right,
I didn't even
right.
do a lot of stuff because my adjuncts weren't trained. I'm like, one thing at a time, sweet Jesus. But I remember coming on, just putting on some lipstick, Trace, because it was like, let me set this straight for whoever will watch my live feed. This is not accurate, right? You cannot follow this linear format. These are not prescribed stages that, you know, I've lost someone and now I'm in denial. I'm going to be in anger.
Right.
And you're
right.
following that as part of your healing process, when that was not the original intent of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. And in her book,
so Kathy, let me just interrupt you and ask you this. So for those of us who've lost loved ones and we have to get through the grieving process, are there actually stages? I know there's stages, but I don't think that there's necessarily five. For me, there could be several.
There's no linear stages. There's the task of mourning, where people talk about, you know, various tasks to help you accept the reality, et cetera. But there's no stages where people will go through this, and this, and then at the end you have accepted it. Not when she was literally looking at terminally ill patients as part
right.
of case studies, as part of her research in this area. So I don't want people to get that, you know, that experience twisted. It because there's not a set pattern or a sequential hierarchical of verbs, if you will, or adverbs or adjectives to help you along this process in terms of these stages. Now, will you feel angry? Yeah. Will you also have some guilt and some regret? Yeah. Will you be shocked and experience some numbness? Yeah, but I can't put that in no sequential order. For those that are left mourning. I know, girl, I'm like, I was ready for you today, Trace. I thought I was going to get it to her. Yeah. So,
because you were like, no, this is not how it is. Well, I think that's your whole purpose. Your whole purpose is to educate us and to school us. What is accurate, what is correct, and what is not. And I think that you just broke it down because you so kindly blew my mind. And I was wondering at what point in this pandemic did your ministry have to step out in the forefront because people were, like, dying left and right. And you still have people to this day who are, like, mourning that in shock.
Still have them. I'm still seeing people. I did a few funerals during the pandemic, and that was, you know, where I'll never forget it. The undertaker, the director, whoever came and looked in my car to count heads because it could only be like five people. And I'm like, oh, my God. It reminded me of, remember we would talk about our favorite five with the cell phone companies?
Yep.
You know, plug in your favorite five, and I'm like, oh, my God. At that time, it was five people, and it was a graveside funeral, and it was like you're in and out. You know, I tried to do the best that I can with that short period of time, but I'm like, whoa, not giving people time to mourn, if you will.
Right,
to express their love, because, you know, one of the things that we do as a people, you know, if we ain't got the money, you're going to get a good funeral.
You know,
if we got to take out a loan or do a GoFundMe, we're gonna put you away nicely.
Right.
And not that they
weren't
put away nicely, but we're going to do this elaborate funeral, this homegoing celebration, music, lengthy remarks, accolades, declarations
yeah.
of love, all of this is going to be on display. And
mm-hmm.
for people, for African Americans and other cultures, black, brown people, just people, the human experience wasn't there. But you know,
yes.
our homegoings are like a job. You know, if it
yes.
start at 10, you know that day is gone.
Yes.
That
yes.
gone.
Oh, my.
So
God.
So the ranking of who walks in, who sits in the cars, and no, we all pulled up there in our cars and waited for our turn, and they did the head count. They, you know, it was a time frame, and I said, wow, God. And then after that, to see, like, so many people losing one loved one after the other. And you're not being able to process it because you have to get on to the next person. And I thought about that, and that is something we refer to as bereavement overload. Bereavement
oh,
overload,
wow.
where there's multiple losses coming at the same time. And the biblical definition, or the biblical, not biblical definition, but the biblical example of that would be Job. Remember, Job had
yes.
one messenger after the other coming to
yes.
tell him what he lost.
Yes.
You lost your children, your livestock. This, you know, now your health is in question as well. So that would be like a bereavement overload, and that's what we've been under, as well as some trauma. But it's been a lot. You know, obviously I can't discuss clients, but I have some, and we're working through it, because grief is work. And what grief does, if you see somebody to help you unpack this stuff, it's going to take that layer off of that loss. But it's also going to help you deal with some other things that you've been holding back.
Powerful.
So, no, when you, honey, when you go in, it's not just that one thing. It's going to be like, you know, like a chain reaction of other stuff that you're now faced to deal with. And
As well.
Do you hear me? And this pandemic, I mean, we had the death, then we had the racial injustices.
Yes,
and where
on top
do you
of
go
that.
With that? And people were taking it to the streets, and I'm like, wow. So we've had a lot, you know, the
going
election
on.
Trying to
yes.
And we come into January 6th, the Capitol riots, and
yes.
it's been one thing
after the other. Kathy, I really hate
you. We gotta go.
And I really,
it's over.
I know. I really hate to interrupt you, but I am out of time.
Okay.
However, I am inviting you back for part two of this conversation, and I think that
okay.
I'm going to do it a little bit different this time, because I want to give you time. And there's other things that we're going to go into, because you said the magic word, and that is unpack. So in our next conversation, that is definitely what we are going to do. I'm going to have my assistant reach out to you with regards to your availability for not next Wednesday, but the Wednesday after next, which I believe is the 24th. And we are going to continue this conversation, girl, because you are blowing our mind, but we will talk to you
yeah.
then. Thank you
okay.
for joining tonight's
Tracy,
conversation to my
you.
Listeners. That was Reverend Dr. Kathy Richer. We're going to have her back, as I just stated, the week of the 24th. Please tune in then. I am definitely out of time. Until then, be blessed. Have a good night.
How y'all doing this evening? How y'all doing this evening? Do y'all want that bounce? Do y'all want that bounce? I say, do y'all want that bounce? That bounce?